Okay, welcome to the study portion of our sacrament meeting. Today is the second day of May, is that right? Second day of May, 2021. And we are reading the sealed book in chapter 16. And we ended last week, we read verse 7 as a teaser. Teaser meaning that means to get your interest for this week, to get you thinking about it, because I think this is a really interesting story we're going to read. We're talking about Moses after they've crossed the Red Sea, and they're out in the desert, and I'll read just a short verse 7, and then we'll have others read. But maybe before we even read much, just give me your thoughts on verse 7. And thus said the Lord unto me, to me, just as I live. Now, I got to say before we go farther, that's actually an oath. As I live is an oath in the Hebrew, meaning I'm swearing. In other words, he lives, and just as he lives, this is what's going to happen. Just as I live, if you keep your arms outstretched over your head, so shall thy victory against Amalek be tomorrow. They had just encountered this big army of Amalekites who were coming to plunder Egypt. They heard that the army had been killed in the Red Sea. They're coming in to fight Egypt. They run into the Israelites on the way. There's a war going on, and the Lord tells Moses, if you keep your arms over your head, so will your victory be. Does that sound, am I the only one that sounds crazy to, or did you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, crazy.
If not, let's just go right ahead and see what happens.
So, well, go ahead. I was just thinking, the outstretched arms. I'm thinking a lot about the connection of the heavens and the earth, the small and the big things, and it's actually the when you stretch out your arms, it's the fifth letter in Hebrew, the hey, it's like window, so we need to open up for the idea of anointment ourselves as being elect and prepared to receive, and it's also the rain again. So I love that this letter is the base of our letter E. That it turned, you know, it was like up like this.
Yeah.
And then it turned, so it helps me to be, and it's interesting that he didn't want to at first, eh? So because he couldn't, because he was weak, the guys put the stone under him.
And yeah.
So we need to fully be blessed. We need each other. Absolutely. That's what I love about this, the outstretching arms. Thank you.
Steve, can you read for us verses 8 and 9?
And Joshua did as I told him, for how much I, Moses, Aaron, and Hur, we climbed to the top of the hill. But being me advanced in years, I could not bear to remain for a long time with my arms outstretched, my head with the heavy stick. As soon as I lowered my arms to the rest, Amalek was immediately to take over the battle. When I lifted up the rod, Israel prevailed against Amalek.
Okay, thank you. Your sound was low. We can read it along too, but somehow your sound wasn't very good there, so you might check that.
Is that better?
Yes, that's better. But you don't need to read it again, so that's fine. Okay, comments.
Well, I think it's interesting that it's not just his hands, but just the rod that he has to hold up too.
He's holding the rod over his head.
With the rod
on his hands, and he says it's heavy. The guy's 80 years. He's 80 years old, and this is for a war. Okay, this is a whole war is going on, and he's supposed to hold this over his head. I guess I'm over concerned, but they will lose the war if it comes down. I mean, how important is this? All right, you get the idea. Other comments. What else do you see here?
Well, the Lord is setting Moses up for a lesson.
Boy, is he ever. Says they climbed to the top of a hill, so he's up where he can see the war.
I have a question. When it says, but being me advanced, is there the Portuguese that makes sense?
Yes, but
Marcel?
Yeah, it's a little rough in English. We would normally say, but I being advanced. And it does
just
say,
leaving out the me, but being advanced would be okay in English too.
Right. Being advanced. Yeah, advanced is not necessarily reflexive where you have an E of a me of your, if that's what you're asking. But you know, it's like the word myself. You have to look up in English what I did, but myself. When is it correct to use myself or me? And there's rules on that kind of stuff. And see, some people might say, but myself being advanced, but that would not actually be correct in English. So anyway, yeah, the translation is what it is. And I don't think, so no, that's not in Portuguese, but that's not the question. The question, because this wasn't translated from Portuguese. This was translated from these funny little characters on gold plates. And in that language, it might very well have been reflexive. How about that? Huh? You have to think about these things. Okay. But as soon as I lowered my arms to rest, they would start to loose. He could see that quickly. I mean, you bring your arms down and oh no. Yeah, it's like it goes bad. It doesn't, not an hour later that it goes bad. It's like instantly bad. Put them back up and it's instantly good. I mean, this is strange. I think I'm most interested in the strange things in the scriptures, I guess. Okay, any other comments before we ask Harm to read the next verse?
Well, just one other comment. I wonder if the Amalekites could see him and see the battle turning if they were affected by the arms up as well.
Well, I'd be really surprised if any of them said, hey, see that old man up there? Watch what happens. I'd be very surprised if they noticed anything.
Yeah.
okay, Harm, would you read maybe both 10 and 11?
At this, Aaron and her interrupted me saying, it is seen by us that your hands, Moses, are too heavy to keep your arm raised high. Please let us help you. But behold, it had not been said by God that I might have helped. And so I rebuked them at first. But there came a time when I could no longer raise my hands to the top and my legs could no longer stand, when Aaron and Hur came to sustain me. And they took a stone and put it under me. And Aaron and Hur maintained my hands raised high, Aaron on the right side and Hur on the left side. And so my hands stood firm until sundown. As a result, Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword.
Okay, comments.
Yeah. Sustaining the good cause. And how many counselors do you need? This what I find so intriguing with the whole counselor, the left and the right.
Right, that was important. On which side? Come on, other comments. What's new here? What did Moses? I will tell you what I'm seeing, and you've got to find at least this many. There's about at least three things that these men suggested that Moses hadn't thought of, and all of them were important. What did these men suggest that were really good ideas that made it possible for a whole day long war to go on? After they did these things, it said the two men were able to hold these hands up from then on. What did they do that was so smart that that worked? When that would be so hard to do all the rest of the day. I mean, they're not supermen. So what did they do?
What is it? Sat him on a stone.
Russell, what?
Sat him on a stone.
Yeah, he sat down. The Lord didn't say you have to stand up. Moses was standing up doing it. And they said the first thing is sit down. He said all the Lord said was hold your hands over your head. So sit down. Hello. I mean...
So
yeah, listen to what the Lord says. He didn't say stand.
Yeah, he did not say you have to stand. Yeah. And he did not say you cannot have help. He said, if your hands are over your head, you're going to win. So you figure it out. So he sat down. That's huge. Because when he sits down, what happens to everything? It all comes down. Okay, now what else happens?
Well, I wanted to say that first when... Aaron and her said they wanted to help. They were rebuked by Moses because Moses thought he had to do this all by himself.
Right.
But the Lord didn't say he could or could not have help.
Right.
And then I think her and Aaron just like, oh, come on, this isn't going to work. We're just stepping in and we're going to figure this out. And they put the stone. And of course, when a person sits down, then the other two that are helping them, they're not up like this.
Right,
too.
Right. Yes. They're standing up and they can hold help. It.
Yeah, and it's easier.
They can hold it all day for a long time. Their arms are not over their heads.
And then also the whole thing about how it's setting up who's on which side and why he had help, all of that. Is important too. Is there something else?
And sundown.
Right. And then that's about when the wars tended to end at sundown. They didn't, you know, no
infrared, why did they change it?
No infrared goggles, you know, to see the other team. you rest at night. And the war was apparently over too. But yeah, it lasted all day. So
I think it's real important to realize that they were rebuked. Here's the prophet rebuking them.
Yeah.
They could have just cowered and said, okay, fine, you know, it's you're leading this thing. But they took it upon their own initiative, followed the spiritual direction. And
right. And that's what a counselor has to do. A counselor, one of their jobs, when Sidney Rigdon was called to be a counselor to Joseph Smith, in that revelation in section 35, of the Doctrine and Covenants, it says part of your job is to help Joseph Smith when his faith gets weak. You are to strengthen him. So everybody's just human. The prophets are not these perfect people that never make mistakes. And one of the huge things in this whole experience to me is that the Lord could have just said, Moses, hey, by the way, you know, you're getting older and it's time you need a little help. And it's time to call some counselors. And you're going to have counselors, like it or leave it, you know. He didn't do that. He showed people need to be shown things. And he
people
was
need to what?
People need to be see things and to be shown
that
when they need something. People in the LDS church need to be shown the LDS. It's not enough to say, oh, Angel Moreau and I came to a guy in Brazil and we got Book of Mormon again. No, they need to be shown that is wrong. The reason we're going to have an Antichrist reign for so long is so the people are voting for socialism now. Yeah, we want to be slaves. And they have to be shown, no, this is a bad idea. So they get to suffer under Satan for a while to say, oh yeah, that was a bad idea. Now we get it. That was actually a bad idea. And so Moses had to be shown that he needed help. Anyway, and look what good help he got to sit down. Anyway, they were good counselors. But good point, Russell. A good leader. The other day in a meeting, and it's the very one that Lisa knows about, Mauricio pointed out that he had been wrong on something and that his counselor had pointed out that he was wrong, and he realized he was wrong and he repented and changed. And that's what counselors are for. So you need a counselor that you need a counselor who's strong and will speak up and not just be a yes man. A yes man is of no use whatsoever. That just agrees always with the prophet. You need a guy. Just one quick thought on that. There's a famous soap company called Procter & Gamble that makes laundry soaps and soap. And the two men, Procter & Gamble, used to fight a lot and argue over everything. I think I might have told you this before, but it's a great lesson. And a man was interviewing them once and said, how come you guys are so successful when you're always disagreeing with each other and arguing? And one of them said, if we always agreed, then one of us would not be necessary. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe one comment. Sure. I was thinking about my former father, who always said, you must see the work. You don't want me to say to you what you have to do. You must see the work. So you have to be visionary. And it also says in the Doctrine and Covenants, I have translated from Dutch, it is not good that we are commanded in all things. So he gives us a basic stuff. This is what you should do. Those who love me, obey my commandments. But then you have to work.
Right.
And look forward. What does this guy need? I'm here with this prophet, but he has need of help, but he won't tell me. So we have to look forward in also the conversations we have. We have to feel what words should I say that this person understands, or what action should I do that it is required.
Thank you. That's excellent. And it fits exactly this, because the way this example happened, it showed not only that Moses needed help, but that these two men had really good ideas. And that to sit down and have them hold it. And Moses realized, oh yeah, this is just what you said. I can keep the commandment, hold the stick over my head, but how I do it is my own way. And his way to stand up was bad, and the way of the two counselors was good. You can sit down and have somebody else help hold your hands up. I mean, anyway, thank you. Okay.
I'm going to leave.
I see you. Are we ready to go more, or should we go on?
Yeah, you go on, but I got to leave.
Oh, you have to leave. Oh, bye-bye. Thank you. Okay. Glad you can come whenever. Okay.
I think this is stewardship in action.
Yes.
Yeah.
And delegation. Yes.
Oh, and delegation. Mm-hmm. The same with his father-in-law.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So we're up to Balkia. If you would read just verse 12 for us, please.
Yeah. And it came to pass when Jethro, my father-in-law, came to me, Moses, and my sons and my wife, Zipporah, in the wilderness to the mountain of God, was encamped. And as soon as I saw him, I immediately went out to meet my father-in-law and bowed and kissed him. And after asking each other about their well-being, we went into my tent. where I told my father-in-law what Jehovah had done to Pharaoh and the Egyptians because of Israel and all the tribulations that passed in the way, and how the Lord delivered us out of the hand of Amalek with the help of Aaron and Hur.
Okay. Comments.
It's, yeah, great. Just sit down and talk, you know, about all these things that happened.
See, they didn't have the internet.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
They did not have even newspapers to find out about. No television news. So Jethro, his father-in-law, is bringing his wife and children. Oh, and sons. Now, this time it says sons, and it means sons. He only had the two sons. And his wife. And so he's able to tell them everything that's been happening.
And the reverence. I love the reverence. He bowed and kissed.
Yes.
Reverence.
Yes, for his father-in-law.
For the priesthood.
And also talking about their well-being. It remembers me of what it says in Doctrine and Covenants. If you have a meeting, then you should first talk about the state of your soul or something. I don't know exactly where it says.
Oh, but we should read that. Yeah, we have our little chat at the first. Maybe we're actually doing that without even knowing we might be doing that. Good idea.
I think it's interesting that his father-in-law, we know that the father-in-law didn't live where the Pharaoh was, where all this happened. But he apparently figured out where Moses was. So some communication had been about that. And then he went there. And my first thought was, how did he cross the Red Sea? Well, there
he didn't have to. He's already on that side.
So Jethro's, they're already on that side. Right. The same side that Moses is on. Okay. So then they go and Moses, so he heard where Moses was, but I don't think he had heard much about the Pharaoh and what happened to the Egyptians.
I don't think he'd heard about it, or he wouldn't have, he didn't know any of this.
Yeah.
You raised a good question. How did he know where to go?
God sent him. And there's a thing in the next couple of verses that explains that.
Okay, because he's going to be called to be the patriarch. So this Jethro is apparently a very spiritual good man.
Yeah.
John, how old do you think he is? Moses is 8.
Steve, what?
How old do you think that Jethro
is? Oh.
Jethro.
Good question. I mean, Moses is 80 and he's marrying Jethro's daughter, but he married her quite a while ago.
Yes, two children.
They only have the two children.
Gosh. Well over 100.
He's probably an older feller.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you have a thought on that? You're just saying you're noticing he's probably older.
Well, I was thinking about him and traveling out into the wilderness and being an interested follower in the priesthood, but here he is out.
Good point. He's crossing a desert with these people.
Now, this location where the battle of the Amalekites was is where they had the miracle of the water, right? With Moses and the staff.
Right.
He's probably been there for a while. Yes.
Okay.
Good point. You know, these people were in pretty good shape for being older. They're desert. I mean, what always gets me is when Moses, 40 years later, after the wilderness, Moses is 120. And on the day he's going to die, the Lord tells him to hike up the mountain. And that's where he's going to die. That's where the Lord will take him, whether he died or was translated. I hope I can hike a mountain now, let alone when I'm 80, 120.
That's for the sandwich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dad is saying, when he's 80, he's bringing down two stone tablets with him. Good point. He's bringing stone tablets around with the rod over his head. Anyway, okay. Maybe let's go on. Maybe Lisa, maybe you can read 13, and if it feels like more, if you want.
Okay, 13. And it came to pass upon my resistance to accept the help of Aaron and Hur that the Lord said to me the next day, it is not good that I should stand alone in the presidency of church of my firstborn. For how much you need support, just as I showed you in the battle of Rephidim, when Aaron and Hur helped you with high hands. Behold now, I'll let you know, Moses, that there should be no victory if you had not allowed Aaron and Hur to sustain you at that moment. In a similar way, I tell you, behold, the time has come for you to organize my church according to the old order of Enoch, which has been in existence since the days of Adam. For how much my gospel is ever the same, being eternal and unchanging.
Okay. Comments.
This is so great. The steps, you know, first all the things with the starting of the Easter, and then now, you know, because he, if you had not allowed, you know, and then and also the next day, the resistance at first, and then the next day, high hands, how symbolic is that, you know, to lift up. You have all these programs on TV that they have the weakest link, that they put people down all the time, also in rap music, like battle, to only negative.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and it here talks about high hands, and now the time has come. So it's like with Joseph Smith, with the first this stage, that stage, and then you get the confirmation with all the angels in Kirtland. And here it said, now the time has come. Imagine all the things these people have experienced. And now the gospel of Enoch, the old order, eternal and unchanging, how humbling it must have been from Moses.
I also want to add that also the stewardship here is so clear, because by making a decision, Moses made a decision that Aaron and Hur were allowed to sustain him at that moment. So, and it was well thought of. He had deliberated with his counselors. And I think this led to God having trust in Moses to, you know, being able to
work with people
and make good decisions.
Right. After counseling with his counselors, yes.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting that not only is Moses learning something, but we are being taught right here in these verses something great too, the hands and everything. But and the Lord thought it was so important that he called Moses out on it the next day and said, hey, Moses, I'm really glad you let your counselors help you.
You figured it out.
Yeah. And he calls his church of my firstborn.
Yeah.
That's definitely saying Jesus. Jesus is church.
They don't know the name Jesus or Jesus Christ yet. And right. Remember, this is all secret. This, none of this church part is in the Bible. That would have ruined it when Christ came. If the Bible had said Jesus Christ and then he's born, that would ruin. They were supposed to figure out who Jesus was and they didn't. And so this was all secret just for us in the last days to say, oh, they actually had a church like we do. And it's the same. And it goes back to Enoch.
Yeah.
Pardon me, I interrupted.
No, that's perfect.
It's
Yeah, I mean, I caught the church thing, but I didn't catch the...
Yeah, they have, so they call it the firstborn because his name's still a secret. Moses just barely learned the name Jehovah.
Yeah.
I am, where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they didn't even have any name at all for God, just the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Harm, go ahead.
It's also about autonomy that we have to figure it out.
Yes.
You know what you said, he had to figure it out. We have to search diligently. And that's, it's all here. And it's what a blessing if we truly understand like blessings from on high, high hands, that we have this knowledge now, you know, because we have to grow in faith like the brother of Jared. And this is so specific, kept for this time to get to the Jews. 44 people died the other day in Jerusalem. Maybe you heard. It's interesting, everything happening at the same time. We have to figure it out.
You've made a great point. I want to emphasize something from my own, where I learned this for myself, and I can say this now. I've told you at the first, I've known for 40 years I was supposed to figure out these calendars. I was shown that. And so at first I would pray and just expect to be told everything. You know, oh yeah, an angel will come, because I had dreams, I was shown something. And so I don't really have to do anything. The Lord's going to show me all of this stuff. Wrong. So wrong. The Lord, at one time I had a dream where an angel came and he pointed to something on a map of the stars. And that was it. No words, no nothing. But I knew to look there and to study. And so I learned that I had to do all the work myself. And I'll tell you why I learned it. Why? But if I got stuck and I really couldn't do it, then would I pray and say, hey, this is really hard and I'm stuck, I need help. And then I would get a clue, just two or three words, just enough to go on. Okay, got it. This one time I prayed and I was stuck and I got nothing. I got no answer. And I immediately knew, because of this had been after many years, I knew that if I got no answer, it means I didn't need an answer. I could figure it out. And I went to work on it that day all happy, because I knew I could figure it out. And I did. I figured it out. And so now I want to tell you why this all happens this way. Now, if somebody asked me, how come you did the calendar this way instead of that way? If it had been an angel, I would have said, I don't know. The angel told me. I don't know nothing. You know, no, I can say, I not only tried it that way, I tried it this way and this way and this way and this way. And I can tell you why every one of those ways do not work. And this is the only way that works. And I tried every false path possible. And I understand it. And so when I get no answer, it actually makes me happy, because I get to figure it out. It's like Lisa knows that I give my grandchildren puzzles, you know, and wire puzzles, and they have to figure it out themselves. And if somebody comes and says, oh, I know how to do that, and shows them, it ruins the puzzle forever, because they'll never know if they could have done it themselves. So the Lord has let me find out how much I can do myself and how much I cannot. And I learned a lot about myself in doing all of this work. I try not to talk. I only mentioned that. That was your fault, Harm, because you brought.
But this is so essential for the Melchizedek priesthood, I think, because it's both worlds. We were probably there at the Great Council, that you can't. It's bottom up, not top down. So it has to work in you that you want to know, and then it's your own. And then you realize at one time, maybe we were all busy with this thing before to be able to recognize it.
Amen.
You know, that it's all the same thing. And we that's why we love it so much, right. I think, because it's in ourselves also.
And it's also the first question I had about the seal book. Yeah, why this is not coming from the prophet, you know, for, Nelson.
Right.
It's the same thing. Then everybody would say, okay, yeah, thank you. And
Exactly, yeah. And they wouldn't even read it.
No,
they would all vote and say, we accept it. And they wouldn't even read it or know what's in it.
Yeah,
very exactly. Sad.
And now it's the people's responsibility to read it or not read it. And that's the sifting, I think.
Sifting.
What I understand.
You two speak so well. What a great vocabulary.
So in verse 14, the Lord is telling Moses also, okay, now that you got this lesson, now you're going to understand how I want the church to be put together. And with just what Harm and Balkia said, that last sentence, it says, my gospel is ever the same, being eternal and unchanging. So yeah, we kind of feel this is right because maybe we had all of that before the veil came over us.
Yeah.
It made us figure stuff out. And the Lord tells us over and over, gospel is the same.
It's the same.
Yeah. So I thought that was important that verse 14 just kind of ties so much together
right. In
that one little verse.
Lisa, how about you reading? Or did you just read, didn't you?
I can read.
Would you, Jeannie, read verses 15 and 16, and then that's probably a good place to start.
I will read those two verses, and I have a big question on something.
Okay.
All right. My gospel, therefore, must contain in itself all the offices of my priesthood, according to the old order of Enoch, even as I will make thee known through my servant Raul, thy father-in-law. And Jethro, when he heard these words of mine, behold, rejoiced for all the good that the Lord had done to Israel, and said, blessed be the Lord who delivered you from the hands of the Egyptians and from the hand of Pharaoh. And behold, that now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. For in that in which the Egyptians exalted their gods, the Lord overcame them.
Thank you. I bet I know what your question is, but what is it?
Well, there's two things that stuck out to me, but in 15, it says that his father-in-law is Raul or something.
Yeah, Raul.
But Jethro's his father-in-law.
Right. So what can we learn from this? If you had figured out, what would
you
guess?
Well, he was married before.
They're the same person.
Oh.
He has two names. He's got the higher priesthood. A lot of times people get a new name. And just in the Bible, it talks about Jacob, but it talks about Israel. And you're supposed to know that they're the same. This is interesting because it just assumes that you're born knowing that Reuel and Jethro are the same person. I learned that in the book of Jasher. It makes it very clear they're two names for the same person. That kind of shows that Moses really wrote this, because it didn't occur to him that people, he didn't think he had to explain that.
Figure it out.
You're supposed to know that, yeah.
Yeah.
We all do that. You know, we'll assume everybody's born knowing something that we know. A good teacher has to be able to think like the student, and what do they know and what don't they know? And they often hire the experts to be the teachers, and they're often terrible teachers because nobody can understand what they're saying. Anyway, same person.
The second question I had was, it's Jethro, the father-in-law, that is saying, well, now I know that the Lord's greater than all the gods. So he's living in a time frame where everybody has all these false gods. And the culture is that you believe in those things. Jethro had the priesthood and he should have known, but
he didn't.
He didn't fully have that faith.
Right.
Until the Red Sea parting and the whole thing. And another thing is that when Moses was doing all of this with the Pharaoh and the plagues and going to the Red Sea, his relationship had been just with really God. When he went back to Egypt and started this with the Pharaoh, he had Aaron. And so maybe that was why he was a little hesitant to ask for help, and makes another point of why this lesson was so important.
Good thoughts.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know,
also,
go ahead, Harm.
Also interesting that he says, I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. So he has understanding of gods in culture then, you know,
right.
And the whole idea of one God probably must grow in him also, you know, because of right. the traditions of the time.
And see, and he makes the point of the gods of Egypt in the book of Abraham. It's very interesting, which is, I believe, a revelation to Joseph Smith. It's not a translation. It's the whole thing's a revelation.
That's what I believe too. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's the stuff he was looking at. That's not what it said. I've had dreams on this. And anyway.
We needed to know.
Yeah, yeah, it's a revelation. But in there, it makes it clear that they're up in Chaldea. That's north of the Media, I guess it is kind of, it's just east of the promised land. It's like across the Red Sea over to the east area. That didn't show up very well. But anyway, the Chaldea is, Babylon is farther north, okay? The whole book of Abraham happens in the book of farther north. And they're showing the Egyptian gods. The Egyptian gods, Egypt had conquered the world, basically. And so they're doing ceremonies with Egyptian gods up in Chaldea, which is north of Midian. So Egyptian gods were like the gods of the world. And they did have power. You can cast down the rod and make a snake. I mean, Satan, they're not stupid. They're Egyptian gods. Okay, they're real, but they're from Satan. And so that's the point. See, these little details are in here. Nobody would have faked that. So the point is, Jethro knew that there were gods of Egypt, that they did have power. And now he knows that the one he's worshiping is greater. See, like I said, that was the lesson back then, is God is actually the greatest. Now we're going to learn that even if God does not appear to be greatest, we still want to worship the one who's good and not the one who's bad.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Not just the most powerful. What other comments? We didn't ask for comments. Those are your questions.
Yeah.
Comments on these verses. The old order of Enoch. So again, we're being told over and over that this church is going to have a presidency of three. And when we get to the rest of it, there's going to be 70 elders. Oh, I'll give you something to chew on before next week. I like that. We do the think about it during the week thing. Very interesting thing here. He was just told at the end of the last chapter, the Lord said, or the last verse, very recently, we just read that the Lord said to him that he's not going to have anybody that would be a high priest, chosen worthy to be high priests after the order, because they just weren't worthy. Now he's going to go on for that priesthood of Melchizedek. But now he's going to go on and say, but you do need to talk about a bunch of elders and 70 elders, and that they need the priesthood, appoint officers in the priesthood of Melchizedek. In verse 19, it's going to say, appoint officers in the priesthood of Melchizedek. And in the other one, he said, there's nobody worthy yet. Anyway, just think about that, because this has been a point of confusion in the LDS church, and it's a point of confusion
everywhere. When he said there was no other, wasn't that back when they went to the battle? Melchizedek had the...
It's right here. It's verse 15 of the last chapter. Because of being a complaining people, the Lord did not authorize me to call any of them to be under the priesthood of Melchizedek, for they were not worthy to be part of this holy order except the 12.
Okay.
And then over here, it's going to say, yeah, go ahead and get 70 men. So it's kind of, see, these are the little puzzles that need to be solved. And we'll tune in next week to the same station.
Stay tuned.
And we will answer. The book will answer your question. All righty. So thank you, everybody. Oh, we're going to stop recording. We still might have some comments after. So thank you, everybody who's watching.